My name is Mr. Smaha. Some of the girls all say he, I am a man with a great aha. Everywhere I go, I gotta put on my show to let you all know.
Well, welcome back to Requiem for Rock with your host and humble narrator, Mr. Smart. I hope that last show's look at politics as muse made a ponder or two for you, or that you just liked the selection of songs across that political spectrum. Requiem often looks at the places and eras of rock, how certain places and times had profound influence on the genre itself. Well, tonight we do that once more. So all aboard the Requiem for Rock magic carpet ride. And a particularly groovy but bumpy ride it will be tonight, dearest of listeners. We go due southwest and 50 years back to Laurel Canyon in La La Land, L.A. to streets named Wonderland Avenue and Lookout Mountain, where we explore the seminal influence of the Laurel Canyon scene in the mid-60s and early 70s, where and when the conflicting mojos, a musical yin and yang, good versus evil, peace and love versus murder and war, all boomed and echoed in that long-ago time in the canyon. We will look at this canyon in the context of it being the birthplace of the flower child and hippie movements, while in paradox, having a very heavy and nasty vibe of murder and death and a decidedly unhippie origin. Ah, history has its great paradoxes, dear listeners. And Laurel Canyon has very interesting paradoxes indeed. Your preconceptions of an era may be burst tonight. I invite you, if tuning in on your screens, to Google Map Laurel Canyon and to observe the unique geography and the strange human architecture there. An area within the Hollywood Hills, deep in the polyglot collection of towns and cities that make up Los Angeles. But it still has coyotes, rattlesnakes, cougars, and assorted four-legged wildlife. And there is the first paradox, urban yet wild. The original Native American bands lived there in the canyons for hundreds of years. Then the Spanish came and enslaved them. In 1850, the USA took over California, and at the end of the American Civil War in 1865, unemployed soldiers were sent there and paid a bounty for each scalp taken of the remaining bands of Native Americans in the canyon to clear the area for real estate development for presidential cronies. So civilization got off to a bad start in Laurel Canyon. Perhaps that karma, to be spoken of among the love beads and lava lamps to come, beginning in 1965, started off real creepy crawl bad 100 years earlier in the canyon. So soon I will get to the rock music, patient listeners. But I must start with the basic premise of tonight. To discuss the notion that the birthplace of the peace and love movement, Laurel Canyon, in fact, was the location of an insidious and devious plot by the very forces that seemed to be the enemy of those hippies, the military-industrial complex. Yes, it was a cunning plan.
Let's see what's in the kitty, shall we? The biscuit barrel. Let's see what's in the kitty, shall we? Ninepence. Oh, God, what are we going to do?
Don't worry, Mr. B. I have a cunning plan to solve the problem.
Yes, Mordick, let us not forget that you tried to solve the problem of your mother's low ceiling by cutting off her head.
The cunning plan was basically this: discredit the early peace activists and anti-war thinkers, who were not hippie love children wasted on acid and other dangerous drugs. but they were university intellectuals, professors, thinkers, and actually very straight-laced people. So to discredit and paint the notion of anti-military as being solely perpetrated by dirty, druggy, godless, diseased hippies, and not by sober and serious thinkers and intellectuals. So then, at the time of the escalation of American involvement in Vietnam, to Laurel Canyon they lured the itinerant musicians of America. There to this urban but isolated place of high canyon wall, cactus, mudslides and rattlesnakes, both human and reptile, as we shall see. And atop the canyon, overshadowing physically and spiritually all that was to come directly below, at the crest of Lookout Mountain Drive, or Avenue, stood the Black Ops movie studio, where the United States military made its propaganda and faked films with the aid of Hollywood experts. And what was that Pied Piper flute that brought them in 1965? Large established record labels dangling national record contracts. And there, in an enclave isolated by the canyon walls and windy hidden roads, among and inside the strange cottages and houses and leftover mansions from past glory days of silent film stars, the band settled into all-night jam sessions and created that hippie sound. Ah, but here is the kick, dear listeners. Those countercultural musicians were, almost to a person, the sons and daughters of the military-industrial complex, whose parents worked in chemical warfare design, weapons manufacturing, military intelligence, CIA, and all the assorted establishment components of that which the hippies purportedly opposed vehemently. So the first band among those jamming musicians to get a juicy contract from the record companies, who were in cahoots with the establishment, was the Byrds. So here now, the first Laurel Canyon band and the first hippie song, released on the summer solstice of 1965, June 1965. The founding member of this band, the Byrds, was the first to score that lucrative contract. Remember, these were national contracts, not local labels, but actually nationwide contracts with record companies. And the first to score that was the Byrds and David Crosby, who was the son of a military intelligence officer and came from a ruling class aristocrat blue blood family that had been and was decidedly establishment. So here's the first hippie song from 1965, Summer Solstice.
Sleepy and dreamy.
The list of acts to come after the Byrds, essentially between 1965 and 1972, is very long. We can't hear them all, dear listeners, but they are a who's who of folk and hippie rock royalty. Some names: Joni Mitchell, The Doors, Frank Zappa, Jackson Browne, Mamas and Papas, early Eagles personnel, Linda Ronstadt, Charlie Manson, Brian Wilson, Neil Young, Crosby, Stills and Nash, members of the Monkees, and many, many more, all came out of Laurel Canyon. 25-year-old Frank Zappa somehow found a way to rent a log cabin at the corner of Laurel Canyon Boulevard and Wonderland Ave, the metaphysical and geographical center of the canyon. Now, this log cabin was in fact a large mansion with 5 levels and 12-foot ceilings. And this was ground zero, the epicenter of the hippie movement. But Frank Zappa himself grew up on a chemical warfare base of the U.S. military. His manager was a CIA hitman and arms supplier. So how did Frank pay the $700 rent per month, which was a significant sum in 1966? How did he pay the rent for this mansion at age 25, being an unemployed musician? It's a question. So the log cabin became a place of all-night jams and a passing port for all musicians coming to L.A. The log cabin was equipped with all the latest amplifiers and musical equipment donated by said national record companies. There was always drugs, lots of them, even if people had no money. And the old freak statement of dope will get you through times of no money better than money gets you through times of no dope. Frank Zappa himself, though, was a right-wing thinker who actually hated the hippie movement that he himself had a huge part in creating. Later, before his death at age 52, from a weird cancer contracted at the chemical warfare plant, he acknowledged being a part of a whole scam to recruit musicians, give them and their followers lots of drugs, though Frank himself never touched them, to encourage debauchery and thus achieve the main goal, to discredit and negatively label anti-war thinkers. So the hippies were in actual fact stooges of the military-industrial warmongers. So it's no surprise that following the Byrds' success in 1965, that in January of 1966, Zappa himself got a juicy record contract and released Freak Out, the first hippie album. So here's a cut off that album. It's called Wowie Zowie by Frank Zappa, who incidentally named his daughter Wowie Zowie later on.
Wowie zowie, you can't be beat. Wowie zowie, baby, you're so neat.
I don't even care if you shave your legs.
Wowie zowie, baby, you're so fine. Wowie zowie, baby, please be mine. Wowie zowie, up and down my spine.
I don't even care if you brush your teeth.
Ooh, I dream of you each morning. I dream of you each night. Just the other day I got so shook up. I dream of you in the afternoon.
Ooh,
the other day I got so sick of. I had a flash in the afternoon. Wowie zowie, baby, love me too. Wowie zowie, and I'll love you too. Wowie zowie, baby, I'll be true. I don't even care if your dad's the heat. Wowie zowie. Wowie zowie. Wowie zowie.
Wowie zowie.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting, the Frankie Valli doo-wop ending to that. And the phony toke-taking to make it sound like, you know, drugs are for people, and for hippie people. And that was the first ever hippie album called Freak Out by Frank Zappa with the cut Wowie Zowie. Now, Frank's wife, Gail, actually worked in military intelligence while they were married. She and Frank grew up in a military environment. In military kindergarten, Gail hit a little boy called Jim Morrison over the head with a hammer. More on Jim after this song. So here's Jim Morrison and the Doors' first release, as where they came out of Laurel Canyon, from November 1966, after yet another one of those nice record contracts. It's their first release.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. We can't still recall the time we cried. Bring on new to the other side. Bring on new to the other side.
She Gets High and Break On Through to the Other Side. The Doors sang often with druggy countercultural themes. But dear listeners, let me take you back a couple of years on the magic carpet ride into 1964, a couple of years before, and across the Pacific near Vietnam in what was known as the Gulf of Tonkin. And here, dear listeners, Jim Morrison's dad commanded the American naval fleet that was anchored there. The Tonkin incident was when the American government claimed that Jim's dad's ship had been attacked by Vietnamese gunboats, setting the American public to shake their fists at the gooks across the sea and cheer for escalation of American aggression and military spending to exact vengeance over there on the other side of the world. Does that sound familiar to you, dear listeners? Except there had been no attack on Admiral Morrison's ship. It was all a lie. Like Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. A spooky false flag. Jim Morrison's antics of indecent exposure and his early and strange death in 1970 joining the 27 Club. All typical spook CIA American stuff. The counterculture must be created before being discredited. Lyrically, the hippie songs were apolitical. They were not anti-war. They were a few, but for the most part, they were typically about flowers and peace and love and about, you know, the typical losing and gaining girls and boys. But they were not anti-war songs. And it's worth noting that none of the successful and famous hippie musicians from Laurel Canyon ever got busted for drugs or ever were drafted to go to Vietnam. So while thousands of their contemporary age countrymen were getting addicted to heroin or blown up by landmines over there in Vietnam, or were languishing in state prison for 2 years for one joint of weed, the hippies of the canyon kept right on recording, holding their orgies, doing drugs, and driving Bentleys with Flower Power stickers on them. John Phillips was the founding member of the Mamas and the Papas. He was the organizer of the Monterey Pop Festival, where the fashions and ways of the hippies were introduced to the world in the summer of love. He was seen as the godfather of that newly rising hippie movement. The son of a Marine captain, John Phillips was educated in military prep schools and at the Annapolis Naval Academy. His first father-in-law, a CIA intelligence spook. John went right from the military school to Cuba pre-Castro and then to the canyon. Many of John Phillips' songs were Pied Piper in nature, convincing youth, often underage youth, to come to California dreaming and wear flowers in their hair, to drop out and tune out. But was this genuine or an attempt to recruit and subvert? To have hordes of kids turning into anti-war hippies, to frighten parents and keep them supporting the war? So here is an example of an early Mamas and Papas song, a song that discusses young girls coming to the canyon. It's called 1230 and Young Girls Are Coming to the Canyon by the Mamas and the Papas, one of their first releases.
legends of beauty lie disguised. Vibration bounds in no direction, but my head is shattered into fragments. Young girls are coming to the
Yeah, the mamas and the papas, 12:30, young girls are coming to the canyon. David Crosby's bandmate in Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Stephen Stills, was yet another son of the military. Educated in American military schools all over Central and South America, where Uncle Sam was kindly imposing their puppets of Wall Street and Dole fruits onto the good people there. Stephen Stills had actually been in Vietnam as a volunteer. The only Laurel Canyon musician to make that long trip far out east, but again, voluntarily. Crosby, Stills, and Nash lived together in a cottage house in the canyon. So here is the song inspired by that house in the canyon, Our House, but it was actually written in Joni Mitchell's living room. Here's Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Our House.
Light the fire, you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long for me, only for me. Come to me now, to me, rest your head for just 5 minutes. Everything is done. Such a cozy room, such a cozy. The windows are illuminated by the evening sunshine. Through them, fiery gems for you, only for you. Our house is a very, very, very fine house. Cats in the yard, life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you. So hard, now everything is easy 'cause of you.
And that vase would have been bought at the Laurel Canyon Country Store, which I'll talk about later. And you're listening to Requiem for Rock with your host, Mr. Smart, on CKMS 102.7 FM on your dials, radiowaterloo.ca on your screens. Support community radio. The band called Love, though not commercially successful, were extremely influential on the Laurel Canyon scene and to rock music in general. They lived communally together in a funky Laurel Canyon house that they named The Castle, with the usual drug-fueled all-night jam sessions. They were one of the first racially mixed rock bands. Their 1967 album, Forever Changes, is cited by Led Zeppelin's Robert Plant as his favorite and most influential album ever. They are credited with being proto-punk and influencing metal rock and indie bands to come. So here is the band called Love with the best-selling single they ever had. It's called Seven and Seven Is. Was Love, you know, and you can see how that's proto-punk and proto-metal and some blues in there. Kind of a cool song. Corey Wells, songwriter and vocalist of the hugely successful Three Dog Night. They had 21 Billboard top 20 hits. Well, they formed that band in Laurel Canyon. And Corey Wells was fresh off a stint in the American Air Force when he did that. So here's an old Laurel Canyon Three Dog Night favorite. It's a really fun song to jam if you can recall the words.
Will I never be to Spain? But I kinda like the music. See, the ladies are insane there. And they sure know how to use it. They don't abuse it, never gonna lose it. I can't refuse it. Well, I never been to England, but I kinda like the Beatles. Will I get it all lost? Can
Mike Nesmith, the wool-hatted monkey, worth $25 million as the son of the lady who invented typewriter whiteout. Mike Nesmith came to the canyon after a stint in the American Air Force. So here's a song he wrote, which was recorded by another canyon band, the Stone Ponies, fronted by canyon denizen Linda Ronstadt. Linda Ronstadt, one of the great songbirds of rock, and the song written by Michael Nesmith of the Monkees. Speaking of the Monkees, Peter Tork and Mickey Dolenz also made their homes in the canyon. And Peter Tork's house was infamous for its drug-fueled orgies and all-night or days-on jam sessions. And Peter Tork was actually quite a good musician. Here he is on piano for the Monkees' last ever number one hit. And yeah, I play Monkees here because they were an underrated rock band for sure.
esteemed. Now you know how happy I can be. Oh, and a good time starts and ends without a dollar one to spend. But how much, baby, do I really need?
Yeah, now that was the Monkees with Peter Tork on piano, who we lost this year. One of a kind, Peter Tork. On a rare L.A. clear day, atop Lookout Mountain Drive, highest point in the canyon, where that creepy military movie studio once stood, where you can look west from there to the mansion on another Hollywood hill, atop Celio Drive, and you can see it from Lookout Mountain in Laurel Canyon. And this is on Celio Drive, is the place where the Sharon Tate murders occurred. But back in the canyon in 1969, a diminutive, dirty, and dangerous little man was impressing all the drug-addled counterculture people at the all-night jam orgies. He supplied the young girls, so they listened to his tunes. Neil Young called him a genius. Brian Wilson called him a friend. Yeah, old Charlie Manson and his bad mojo was perfect for the canyon and perfect for the image that the establishment wanted to portray of counterculture freaks. But perhaps old Charlie was just a little too wacko even for those establishment record companies. They spurned him, so people died. His music oddly sounding like 50s crooner, lunatic lounge lizard. Here's a short cut of Charles Manson. And I'll tell you one, Charlie was a lot of things, but he wasn't lazy. He wrote about 100 songs, and he certainly worked it at his craft, but he didn't get anywhere, and unfortunately, you know where that went. So here's Charles Manson with Invisible Tears.
Invisible tears in my eyes. Incredible pain in my heart, indestructible memory, all in review. Impossible though things may get, improbable I will forget. Indelible memories of sweet lovable you. You're back again, and I'll take you in. Although I've only seen pictures of the past, those arms are not real. But somehow I feel, if I just close my eyes, then maybe this might last. Invisible tears in my eyes, incredible pain in my heart, indestructible memories, all in review. Impossible though things may get, improbable I will forget. Indelible memories, incomparable memories, indispensable memories of sweet lovable you.
And all the cowboys went, what did you do to my son?
Yeah, that was old Charlie Manson with Invisible Tears. Graham Parsons of the Flying Burrito Brothers was another military kid and heir to a family fortune. They owned one-third of all citrus groves in Florida. He was initially with the Birds before forming the Flying Burrito Brothers in the canyon. And I'm kind of thinking I'm going to be out of time if I try to play that song. But check it out sometime. It's called one of the great songs early that was recorded when they were staying in the canyon. Is a song called To Love Somebody. If I got time, I'll come back to it. Now, the The Laurel Canyon Country Store was a place of pilgrimage and a place to buy granola and booze and smokes for the Laurel Canyon hippies. There was a patio for musical jams where all the aforementioned musicians would gather for coffee in the mornings and impromptu jams at night. Countless musical and Hollywood acting hopefuls have worked there. It was where Jennifer Aniston worked just before getting the Friends gig. And you can still visit the Canyon Store, a relic of the past, with multicolor tie-dye bubble-written signage. Zappa's log cabin burned mysteriously on Halloween 1970. A lot of the houses that were our house to the establishment-funded hippie musicians are now vacant lots or have been rebuilt in that strange Laurel Canyon architecture. As those successful musicians of the 1960s moved to Malibu or Manhattan penthouses, and the unsuccessful ones to flop houses or coffins in the early 1970s, the heyday and era of the Laurel Canyon music scene was over. Only the heavy drug dealers stayed ensconced in the funky mansions and cottages there. But the bad mojo that began with slavery and scalpings 100 years before remained. In 1981, Laurel Canyon and Wonderland Avenue was the scene of the four-on-the-floor murders, the only mass murder in L.A. to match the Tate killings, perpetrated by that Laurel Canyon musician and psychopath Charlie Manson. The four-on-the-floor murders involved porn star John Holmes, who died before he could be prosecuted. Catch the flick about it. It's called Wonderland, if you can. It's a really good movie, really interesting movie, and it speaks to that time, the Canyon, and around 1981 era. Here's a little trailer from that movie.
Hi, everybody. I'm John Holmes.
Wait, who's John Holmes?
Holmes is one of the biggest stars in the X-rated film industry.
Look who just walked in. Yeah, who do you love? Rock and roll.
This is the best party I've ever been to.
In the summer of 1981, the Hollywood Hills was the place to be.
Life is just too good.
The party couldn't get any hotter.
LA in the summer, anything can happen.
The nights couldn't get any longer.
The money or the guns in 2 days.
And he couldn't get any bigger.
You want to see it?
Yeah.
Sure, John.
I'm his girl. What happened, John?
I had to, Sharon. I had no choice.
The Southland is in shock today over a series of brutal killings that occurred here on Wonderland Avenue early today.
Beginning to think that I'm wasting time.
I know about the robbery that you and all those dead people up on Wonderland pulled on Eddie Nash. Things I do.
You are in great danger.
And I'm feeling the strain.
You gotta get away from him.
Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free.
John was the only one who knew about the Nash hit.
Don't believe a word he says.
Where you going?
Anywhere. Everywhere.
Did you go back to Wonderland?
You're gonna do to those guys on Wonderland what you did to me.
Eddie Nash has got a gun to your knee and he says he's gonna kill your wife. What would you do?
Val Kilmer, Kate Bosworth, Josh Lucas, Dylan McDermott, Lisa Kudrow.
But I'm gonna tell you a story. A story called Wonderland.
Yeah, that's a clip from the movie Wonderland, a true story. Check it out if you can. Yeah, I'm going to play a little bit of the Flying Burrito Brothers, To Love Somebody. We got a little bit of time here at Requiem for Rock, so here we go. Burrito Brothers, Graham Parsons, To Love Somebody.
There's a light, a certain kind of light, that never shines on me. I want my life to be here with you, to live with you. There's a way
can't have you, if I can't have you. The way I love you.
Yeah, great song by Graham Parsons and the Flying Burrito Brothers. So, I hope that you've enjoyed tonight's look at that time and place. As always, so much more could be said, but time grows too short once again, dear listeners. I encourage you to do some reading of your own about Laurel Canyon. Yes, Laurel Canyon, that musical microcosm, a funky, far-out place that had profound, enormous influence on the genre of rock. A place of good vibe, a place of evil vibe. A historical, geographical, metaphysical paradox, where the origin of the counterculture anti-establishment was in part created and almost fully funded by that very establishment itself. Where a black ops movie studio once cast a sinister shadow from its perch atop the Lookout Mountain, projecting its spook methodology to the hippies below. Even today, many dark shadows still loom under the shade of those looming canyon walls. And like any good hippie, Requiem for Rock and your humble narrator, Mr. Smart, flashes you a peace sign for the week to come and for always. Good night and thanks for listening.
Church, I passed along.